Today is Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 through 33. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." This is the reading.
Occasionally, one comes across a passage in the lectionary that is so rich that you see many sermon opportunities, many messages jumping out at you, and it's hard to decide where to go with what you have been given. This was one such occasion. I think that this is a passage that has much to say to us, and so I decided actually not to decide. And today you get two sermons for the price of one. But fear not, they're both short. So you won't miss. It's not football season yet, so you don't have to worry about a Cowboys kickoff. But you won't go inordinately long past your lunchtime. But I'm going to start with message one. I received an email this week that I think has some theological weight and measure to it and is somewhat connected with the passage, and so I want to share it with you now. A kindergarten teacher gave her class a show-and-tell assignment. Each student was instructed to bring in an object to share with the class that represented their religion. The first student got up in front of the class and said, "My name is Benjamin, and I am Jewish. And this is a Star of David." The second student got up in front of the class and said, "My name is Mary, and I am a Catholic. And this is a rosary." The third student got up in front of the class and said, "My name is Tommy, and I'm a Methodist. And this is a casserole." Actually, my mother-in-law sent me that among other pearls of wisdom this week. But I liked it because of the fact that very often we disciples talk about how good we are at eating. And outside of worship, pretty much any other time we get together, there's food. And we have one such event later today, as a matter of fact. But our passage this morning, I want to look at the words in the very first verse, 22, says, "Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray." Well, immediately after what? It's the first question that comes to mind. And as it happens, if you go back and look, the previous passage to this is the feeding of the multitudes on the side of the hill. Now, our kids that were here in Vacation Bible School know plenty about that. They know about the two little fishes and five loaves of bread with which the multitude was fed through the power of Jesus Christ. But Jesus, calling this gathering to a close, he sends the disciples off by themselves on a boat to get away, to have some quiet time, because he realizes that what they have just been through, although it is undoubtedly a very strong spiritual high for them, they have given out tremendous amounts of physical and spiritual energy. They need to replenish because they have served. They first of all showed an incredible demonstration of trust when Jesus said, I'm going to bless this small meal for one or two people, and okay, here you go, give it to them. I don't know if I would have had the courage to turn around and start passing it out. Because we don't, it doesn't say in the scripture that suddenly there was a mountain of food that appeared. It just happened, and we don't know how. That's part of what makes it a miracle. So we don't have an explanation for it. But Jesus understood that after this incredible act of service and of giving, that the disciples, they needed to replenish, and he too needed some quiet time. We see many times where Jesus tries to go off somewhere and get some quiet time, and many times it's not so successful for him because people are so drawn to him, they won't leave him alone. That's kind of how the feeding event started. He went up on the hillside, wanted to have some quiet time, and people found out he was there and then just followed him up there. And out of compassion and love for God's creation, for God's people, he gave himself and he gave his time just as the disciples did. But then he went up and he had time on the mountain to pray. We have such an incredible challenge in our culture today, finding balance in our lives. We live in a culture here in the United States that pressures us to produce, where we are taught to measure our self-worth by what job title we have, by the size of the house we live in, the clothes we wear, the cars we drive. We have an incredibly difficult time making time to be fed spiritually, to have quiet time, to pray, because we can't measure that and show its worth. I can show you, I can give a board report to the church board that says, I made this many hospital calls, I went to see this many people in their homes, but how can I quantify for you the value of an hour spent in prayer? It is so very hard. And so we have a difficult time giving ourselves time for that replenishment. But Jesus understood, and I think we see in what he does for the disciples and sending them off, he understands the need for balance. We have a need to feed others, to serve, but we also have a need to be fed. We have a need to give and to receive, to care and to receive care. It's easy to understand with our physical selves, the both and nature. You understand that if you do nothing more than take in calories, be they empty or nutrient dense ones, if you just take in and you don't exert, what happens? You gain weight. You get sluggish. You lose physical strength and muscle tone. At the same time, if you get up in the morning to go run a marathon and you don't eat and you don't drink and you don't, you know, properly care for your body and give it the fuel it needs, what's going to happen? You're going to crater and fall way before you get to that finish line. And we understand that when it comes to our physical bodies, we're pretty good about that. Sometimes, you know, we're better about the eating part. And, you know, I shared with the early service this morning that there are two basic groups of people, those that eat to live and those that live to eat. And I tend to belong to the second group. I have a love-hate relationship with food. But, as some of you perhaps can identify with me in that relationship, but we have an easier time understanding the need for the balance in physical care. Although I would say in our nation that is something that we see as a challenge, because we do see a growing weight crisis and becoming less active. Taking care of our bodies is important. It's part of what God gave us. But I think it is even a greater challenge for us, and perhaps, if not as important, more important, maybe even for our spiritual care, to understand that we must have both. all we do is take in, if all we do is come and receive nourishment on Sunday morning or through fellowship time or through a small group, but we don't serve, we don't expend energy giving the love of God away, then we become slow, we become heavy, and we lose our strength. Conversely, if all we do is serve, and we don't take time to replenish, we will burn out. Every life, in order to be healthy, growing, learning, strong Christian, you must feed and be fed. It's not an either or. That's your first message. The second one comes when it starts up in verse 24. You will notice it says, by this time the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land. And it goes on to talk how the disciples were greatly distressed, how Jesus, sensing and knowing of their distress, comes to them on the lake. They get a little freaked out. They've never seen anybody walking on water before, and he's too far away for them to make out physical features. And so they think, well, maybe it's a ghost. They don't know what. You know, it's not something that they've experienced before. Then he gets a little closer, and Peter realizes it's him and says, you know, if you're the Son of God, make me come out on the water. Well, God bless Peter. He's wanting to stretch and to grow. And Jesus says, well, okay, come on out. That's what you want to do. And Peter does. And he starts to walk on the water. But then he notices the storm. He notices the wind and the waves. And he begins to sink because he forgets who is right beside him. He forgets because he takes his eyes off of Jesus. He begins to sink. Now there are many messages that tie together in this part of the passage for us. One of them is storms come. You can be as close to Christ as possible. The disciples, who could get closer? And they experienced storms. Now storms come in so very many ways for us. In medical crises, changes in jobs, relationships that end or begin, friends and loved ones who leave us through changes in their lives, or we lose them in death. We have many, many different types of storms that we experience as human beings. That's unavoidable. We're not exempt as followers of Christ. But here's a reality to look at. It's something you already know, but sometimes to be reminded helps us when we need strength, or we need someone to kind of nudge us in another direction. The farther we are from Jesus when those storms come, the scarier they are, the bigger they seem, and the worse they feel. It is the power of Christ that gets us through the storms. Sometimes, in very rational ways, God uses the people around us to bring us comfort and strength and wisdom and guidance. And sometimes we experience God's help and God's strength in mystical ways that we cannot explain. I remember a woman in a church I served who talked about a time when her husband had a very severe closed head injury. And the doctors came to her after their first evaluation of him in the emergency room and essentially said to her, if he survives this, do not look for any kind of meaningful recovery. So the prognosis was grim. Almost immediately, first word from the doctors was, it's not good. Now that undoubtedly was a frightening time and a storm for her, but in the midst of prayer, she said in a very short time after that visit with the doctor, she had a peace wash over her. Nobody had come and said anything different to her. There wasn't a person coaching her or doing something to change. It was just something that she couldn't explain, and she knew it was the presence and power of God, and she said she knew somehow, some way, it was going to be all right. And I'm here to tell you, her husband walks and talks and eats and plays the trumpet and tells jokes and acts up, and he is the man he was before the accident. And the doctors cannot explain it. but God came to her. And so God uses a variety of ways to come to us. Jesus came in a way that the disciples had never experienced before when he walked out on the water to them. But he comes to us and is the one who has the power to walk with us through the storms. And the other thing, in Peter's experience with Jesus on the water, when we trust Jesus fully, when we give ourselves completely to him and let go and let him hold on, we can walk on water. We can do things that we never imagined were possible if we give ourselves and our trust to Jesus Christ. Thanks be to God.